WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information.
And the time is 5 o'clock. John Falstaff here, and we have 2 hours of wonderful Celtic music for you. And we have news of a great number of upcoming concerts for lovers of Irish and Celtic music, no fewer than 10. We also have a special guest coming in today, a man with a large, large collection of books on Robert Burns, 1,000, I'm told. His name is Frank Shaw. He'll be with us in about 30 minutes. But let's start off with Brian Conway and Brendan Dolan. They are playing this coming Saturday, and they're playing at the Red Door Playhouse in Roswell. This is Trim the Velvet. Thank you.
This is Mike Katz of Battlefield Band, the best of Scottish music. You are listening to The Celtic Show on WRFG. Battlefield Band are playing at the Red Light Cafe, Amsterdam Avenue in Midtown Atlanta on Friday the 27th of February. Hope you can come along and open your ears to the finest of Scottish music. In the meantime, here are some tunes especially recorded for the show and played on the Scottish small pipes. A slow air called Sunset on the Somme, followed by a strathspey titled The Fiddler, and the last tune is one of my own, called The Gathering. That's the name they are giving to a really grand Highland Games in Edinburgh at the end of July this year. The band are part of the music programme at the Games, so maybe we'll see you there. Thank you.
Mr. Brian Conway, Sligo-style fiddler all the way from New York. And he is playing with the man who just played with him, Brendan Dolan, on piano there, this coming Saturday, the 14th of February at 7:30. It's all taking place at the Red Door Playhouse in Roswell. And I believe tickets are only available there and then, no advance purchase required or necessary. There's also a workshop for Irish fiddle, flute and piano that afternoon. And if you're interested in that, give us a call down here at 404-523-8989 and we can put you in touch with the gentleman who's running that. Brian Conway and Brendan Dolan. We started off with a track from his album Consider the Source, which I think is his second one. It's fairly recent. It's on CIC Records out of the west of Ireland. Trim the Velvet and Lord Gordon's, and we finished up, they were reels, we finished up with Hornpipes, The Eclipse and The Sunshine. And in between, we heard from Mr. Mike Katz, that gentleman from Los Angeles, who seems to have morphed into a Scotsman. He's a member of the Battlefield Band, and the Battlefield Band are playing at the Red Light Cafe in Amsterdam Avenue on Friday the 27th of February. Other upcoming shows, The Chieftains at the Fox on the 28th of February, Moira O'Connell at Eddie's on the 7th of March, The Pogues at the Tabernacle on the 9th of March, Boys of the Lock on the 14th of March at Spivey, Buddy O'Reilly Band, of course, on Paddy's Day itself at Eddie's Attic, and Celtic Woman, March the 24th and 25th at the Fox. But you don't have to wait that far to get some great music. This weekend, in fact, you have a choice. You've got Brian Conway and Brendan Dolan on one stage, trying to entertain you here in the Atlanta area in Roswell, and also the 17th annual Savannah Irish Festival, which takes place 13th, 14th and 15th, three-day weekend coming up. John Doyle, Sean Doyle, Athena Turgis and Mick Maloney of Greenfields of America are also part of that, as is Ed Miller and Tommy Sands. We're going to hear some of their music now. We're going to start off with Greenfields of America. Thank you.
love to mention, in Ireland he was born. I love him very dearly, alas from me he's gone. He's gone unto America, and he promised to send for me. But the face of my bonny young Irish boy I can no longer see. 'Twas in the city of Derry, that place of note and fame, when first my bonny Irish boy a courtin' to me came. He told me pleasant stories, said his bride I'd be, but the face of my bonny young Irish boy I can no longer see. Well, I paid for passage to New York, and on arrival there, to seek and find my Irish boy I quickly did prepare. I searched New York and Providence, Boston all around, but the face of my bonny young Irish boy was nowhere to be found. Searched through Philadelphia, then to Baltimore. I searched the state of Maryland, I searched it o'er and o'er. I prayed that I might find him wherever he may be, but the face of my bonny young Irish boy I can no longer see. One night as I lay on my bed, I dreamt I was his bride. Sitting on a bluebell hill, he sat by my side. I gathering of primroses as we did in days of yore. I awoke quite broken hearted in the city of Baltimore. Voice, I knew it was the lad I did adore. I hurried for to let him in, I never felt such joy, and I fell into the arms of my bonny young Irish boy. And now that we are married, he never will go to sea, because I love him dearly, I'm sure that he loves me. My first sweet son's called after him, he is my darling boy. He's a picture of his father, my bonny young Irish boy.
Seeds of our horizon, an island rising upon the sea. And all around me the waves were rolling, nine times over and under me. Mid song of thunder, a maiden of wonder appeared before me like an angel queen. Her smile inviting, her eyes enlightening, her beauty frightening on an earthly shore. Oh, can it be, or is it I'm dreaming? For no such vision have I seen before. She said it's dreaming that bears creation, that grows the land and that fills the sea. I am behind you, I am before you, I'm all around you, if you could see. It's then she led me down by the river, where daisies gather and dark waters flow. And salmon leap for the hazel berry, to share the mysteries of returning home. And all around me the wars were raging, to have and to hold her their battle call. The dead arose when they gained their learning, the dream of loving belongs to all. From far off places arose in chorus like a single clan. And through her eyes I could see the dawning of what has been and what it can be. A land of promise, a land to cherish, an island dreaming where the heart.
In 3 minutes, we'll be joined by our special guest, Frank Shaw, who's going to talk all about Burns.
My love is like a red, red rose that's newly sprung in June. My love is like the melody that's sweetly played in tune. As fair art thou, my bonny lass, so deep in love am I, and I will love thee still, my Jo, till all the seas gang dry, till all the seas gang dry, my dear, till all the seas gang dry, and I will love thee still, my love, till all the seas gang dry. The seas gang dry, my love, and the rocks melt away the sun, and I will love thee still, my dear, while the sands of time shall run. and fare thee well, my only love, and fare thee well a while, and I will come again, my love, though it were 10,000 miles, though it were 10,000 miles, my love, though it were 10,000 miles, I will come again, my love, though it were 10,000 miles. And I will come again, my love, though it were 10,000 miles.
Mr. Ed Miller there, all the way from Edinburgh. Actually, he lives in Austin, Texas, but he's coming to town soon. Well, he's coming to Savannah. This coming weekend, there's a 3-day festival, the 17th annual Savannah Irish Festival, and it's going to feature members of the Greenfields of America, plus Ed Miller, plus Tommy Sands, and we just heard from all of those folks. We heard from the Greenfields of America, they have a new album out, I guess this will be their 30th anniversary. We heard Jim O'Keefe's The Clog and The Star Above the Garter, and another slide, The Hare in the Corn, and follow that up with the song The Bonny Irish Boy. Follow that up with Tommy Sands and the opening track from his new album, recorded with his son and daughter, and it's called A Young Man's Dreams, and that took us into Ed Miller, who has an entire album out now called Lyrics of Gold, songs written or collected by Robert Burns, and we heard his version of My Love is Like a Red, Red Rose. Again, all those three folks are playing every day, I believe, of the festival in Savannah. You can probably find all the information you want on the web. Speaking of the web, there's a website here we want to alert you to, because as we talk to our special guest in a minute, you might want to investigate things on it. It is the electricscotland.com website, and you'll find out why that's relevant in a moment. We are delighted to be joined in the studio by Mr. Frank Shaw, who is a collector of Burns books and a fan of Burns, and we're delighted to have you with us.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, John.
I understand that you got into this in part through discovering your own personal roots. Maybe 20 years ago you found out you had some Scottish blood, and
yes,
that began your pilgrimage.
I did. I just started trying to find out where we all came from, and luckily enough found a lady in North Carolina who had written a book on the Shaws of southeastern North Carolina in Bladen County, and I said, wow, that's where my folks are from. And so I called her, and she said, if you're not part of the direct line, there's no need in wasting my time. So I asked her, I said, well, how am I supposed to know? And she said, well, send me something on your mom and dad. So I said, well, I've got funeral notices of people from Bladen County who came. And so I sent those up, and she called back 3 or 4 days later, and she said, you might be interested in knowing that our grandfathers were brothers. And so she had one history of the Shaw family left, and I was able to get it.
So you passed the test.
That's where it started.
You were in.
Yep, that we were in. And that's so lucky in genealogy. That seldom happens.
So where did you go from there?
Well, I naturally studied the book, found out we went back to 1711, and then the records disappeared because a little church on the Isle of Jura, where my people are from. Isle of Jura is off the coast of Argyll, on the western side of Scotland. There were about 2,000 people living on the island at that time. Today there's less than 200. There were 200 Shaws living on the island back then, and today there are none living there, so we're looking forward this summer of taking my family to the Isle of Jura, and at least there will be 6 on the Isle of Jura.
So how did you get into the whole Burns thing then?
A friend invited me to go to a Christmas party, and I did and enjoyed it, and my wife and I have participated ever since. And it's a regular meeting that we enjoy very much, and the cottage is so distinctive. It's just a place to come to, as William Penn Warren said some time ago.
So 2 weeks ago today, Robert Burns turned 250. as I mentioned at the time, I was astonished to find out how popular he was as measured by items on Google News. He got 3,000 hits on his birthday. And by the way, if you were paying attention to the web this past Wednesday, which was the 50th anniversary of the death of Buddy Holly, rock and roll pioneer, he only got 1,500 hits. So Robert Burns, by one measure, seems to be twice as popular worldwide, at least in news items.
Okay, you can also just go on the internet and dial up Robert Burns, and you'll get 2,670,000 hits just on the name Robert Burns alone, and that's how popular he is today. And that's one of the peg holes that I always look at, and evidently you do too, to see how many websites there are on a particular subject or on a particular person.
So how did the UK honor his 250th birthday?
They did a lot of things. It was very difficult to give you all of them, but I'll mention a couple that are rather important. The Royal Mail, for instance, came out with a third set of stamps on Burns, and this is significant. In 1966, they gave him the first set, 1996 the second set, and quite surprising to me, the third set in 2009. And he now surpasses Winston Churchill, who has two. And he leaves behind in the dust a fellow named Willie Shakespeare and Charles Dickens. Either one of those just have one. And in addition, the Royal Mint put out a new two-pound coin with a verse from Auld Lang Syne on the part of it, or a portion of the verse. Clydesdale Bank and the Royal Bank of Scotland are allowed to print their own money, and the Clydesdale Bank honored him with a 10-pound note this year. They did a lot of things. One of the most fascinating things was my friend Clark McGinn spoke at Westminster Abbey on the night of Burns' celebration at 6:30 along with the London Burns Club, and I just thought it would be interesting if Burns could talk what he would think today about being honored in Westminster Abbey. If you've been back to the corner where the Poets' Corner is, you know that there's this huge statue of Shakespeare, and sitting on the little bust is Burns. But I've always taken satisfaction in the fact that he is above Shakespeare and is looking down on Shakespeare.
William One Stamp Shakespeare.
Right.
So for somebody who thinks they don't like Burns, isn't interested in them, would you argue that maybe they're just not familiar with the right material?
I think so. A lot of people that I've found who have a prejudice toward Burns, and I don't know any other way to call it. If I may tell you a brief story, back in North Carolina when I was at the seminary at Wake Forest in the early 60s, it was during the time when we were having problems with layoffs, and a local boy in the Sampson County was in the Air Force and had flown missions over layoffs, reconnaissance missions. And he was home for rest and relaxation, even though they didn't call it that back then. And when church time came along on Sunday morning out in the middle of this tobacco land, I asked his mother where he was, and she said she did not know because he had gone away to fish and had not come home. And tragically and sadly, they found him that afternoon, and he had gone out on a fishing pond and had gotten into the hard drink a little too much and had tipped out of the boat and had drowned. And this was a guy who flew fighter jets. At the funeral on the hillside there near Roseboro, North Carolina, the 82nd Airborne from Fayetteville came out to honor him. You can picture in your mind, here's his grandmother sitting on the front row, the granddaughter between her and the mother, but grandmother was not watching the guys from the 82nd, and so when it was time for them to fire their first volley, they did, and the volley went off, and on that hillside it sounded like a jet. It was so loud out there, and Grandmama fainted because she was not paying attention and didn't realize what happened. The little girl says, "My God, they shot Grandma." And it was kind of difficult to finish the funeral because there was a lot of chuckling going on. But the point is, she knew what she had heard, she knew what she saw, but she was dead wrong on both of them. And I think there's a lot of people that judge Burns the same way. They've heard about his womanizing, they've heard about his drinking, and that's all they know about Burns, and they judge him that way, and they're just as wrong as the little girl was in Sampson County, North Carolina.
So how would you answer the question, why does Burns matter today in Scotland?
Burns matters today because, let's just face it, he's Scotland's and the UK's greatest gift. Even though there'd be some people that say Shakespeare just does not pull the money in that Burns does. For instance, Burns annually, and tourism in Scotland pulls in 157 million pounds, not dollars, but pounds. And this summer, with the thing they call the homecoming, they're looking for him to bring in another 40 million pounds. And I think there's a tragic irony here for me in this regards, that he, on his deathbed, was begging a family member and a friend to give him 5 pounds from one and 10 pounds from another so he would stay out of jail. He was so afraid he was going to be put in prison because his uniform from the Dumfries volunteers had not been paid for, and they were threatening him. Well, this to me is interesting, that he was trying to save his family. He was trying to save his little hearth-warming people that he had there, his children. His wife was pregnant and expecting and actually had a child the day that he was buried. And all. And yet we come back 250 years later, and a guy who was not given much of anything other than by a few people, but nothing by the country itself to any extent, is being asked to bring in not only 157 million pounds normally, but an additional 50 million pounds, 40 million pounds again. And it just seemed like that they put it all right on the back of Byrne's shoulder, and as such, it's just a mighty load for a man who really didn't have hardly anything and just worked for a few pounds a month.
Interestingly, when he did die, I believe money did pour in from Scotland for his wife and family.
Yes.
Which would have surprised him a lot.
Raised a lot of money, and I'll be happy to tell you that the Lord Mayor of London raised more money than anybody else did, and I'm proud to say that not only was he from Dumfries, but his last name was Shaw. Uh-huh. And so I've always taken a great deal of pride in that. But Burns has been Scotland's greatest gift for 200 years, and you ask why? It's because of his poems, his songs. He helped pioneer the Romantic movement. His internationalism cannot be eclipsed by anyone, for a man's a man for all that. And you may as well throw his letters in, because if you're willing to take the time to read them, you'll find they're some of the greatest prose that you will ever read. And he inspired poets like Wordsworth and Coleridge and Emerson. And only recently did I find out that Burns gave John Steinbeck the title of Mice and Men, and after a fashion, the same writer said he gave J.D. Salinger the title of his book Catcher in the Rye. And so that is why I think Burns is so important to Scotland and to them.
Do you have a favorite Burns poem or song that you'd like to tell us about?
Yeah, I do. My favorite Burns poem is John Anderson, My Joe. And the reason it's my favorite is it's a song of joy. It's a song of love. I've had other poems of Burns that were my favorites over the years, other songs that meant a lot to me. But as I have aged and hopefully matured, my mind and more importantly my heart keep going back to John Anderson, My Joe. And while this song expresses the love of a wife for the man in her life, after decades of marriage, I might add, identify strongly with the gentle words that they have. So let's look at the word Joe, J-O, not J-O-E now. It's an unusual word. It's a term of endearment. What does it mean? It can be interpreted as joy, John Anderson, my joy. Sweetheart, John Anderson, my sweetheart. And we could go on, darling, lover, or dear. I've chosen to use another word, the word love. It is a song of acclamation, one that you can shout from the hills, a la Julie Andrews, you can see running through the hills singing. It's a song of affirmation. It's a quiet internal resolve, a safe harbor. You know the woman you love loves you back. You need to know that Burns took a rather risque, bawdy barroom song, John Anderson, My Joe, that was not fit for polite or proper company, and transformed it into a song of beauty and, as I said earlier, a song of joy. And for the ladies present who may be listening, you've heard about Robert Burns and his wife, his affairs. This is Burns writing from a woman's perspective. Get the words and read them. The words come from the recesses of her heart. The genius of Robert Burns comes through in this song, to me, probably as much as any song he wrote, including Auld Lang Syne. If any man ever knew or really understood women, Robert Burns did. Just listen to these words. John Anderson, my love, John, when we were first acquainted, your locks were like the raven, your bonny brow was smooth, And now your brow is bald, John. Your locks are like the snow. But blessings on your frosty head, John Anderson, my love. John Anderson, my love, John, we climbed the hills together. And many a cheerful day, John, we had with one another. And now we must gently totter down, John, and hand in hand we'll go and sleep together at the foot. John Anderson, my love.
Let's take a listen to these words in the hands of a woman, a fine singer. Her name is Eddie Reader.
John Anderson, my Joe, John Anderson, my Joe, when we were first acquaint, your locks were like the raven, your bonny brow was brent. But now your brow is belled, John, and your locks are like the snow. But blessings on your frosty pow, John Anderson, my Joe. John Anderson, my Joe, we'd climb the hill together, and money's a county deed, John, we had we in another. Now we mun totter down, John, and hand we'll go to sleep together at the fight. John Anderson, my Joe, John Anderson, my Joe.
Lovely recording there from 4 or 5 years back. Eddie Reader from an album called Sings the Songs of Robert Burns, and that was her version of John Anderson, my Joe. I understand you've actually been trying to correspond with Eddie Reader at the moment.
Yes, I attempted today to contact her to see if I could use borrow an article of hers to go on my website entitled What Robert Burns Means to Me. And I feel pretty good that she will go along with it, because several other people at this time have done the same thing. Professor David Purdy, Professor Gerald Carruthers, and Dr. Ken Simpson. All of these people have already agreed to allow me to put it up on my website.
So let's talk a little bit about your website.
Okay.
This is all part of the electricscotland.com website.
Correct.
So what have you got on there, and why would people want to look it up?
Well, overall, www.electricscotland.com, run by Alistair McIntyre out of Canada, enjoys averaging 2.25 million hits a month. We like to think we get a few of those when mm-hmm. they turn in over there if they are interested in Burns, because we have a section over there entitled Robert Burns Lives, in which we ask lay people and scholars to write articles for us and let us post them there. We have some of the greatest scholars, particularly Dr. G. Ross Roy from the University of South Carolina, who is probably, if not one of the top two or three scholars in the world on Burns. I would be hard-pressed to tell you who the other two were. They'd be a juggernaut with so many of them. But we have that. And then on the other side, I also interview authors who have a book out that I will take and review it. And I've never been turned down by an author to interview by way of email. I make it easy for them, and I'll send them 10, 12 questions. And I pledge to them that I will not rebut anything they say, so that they have the freedom to say what they want to say without worrying about me having the last word. I want them to have the last word. The only two people that I have not been able to interview are the two people I was not able to get in touch with. Dan Brown was one when I did the Da Vinci Code. The other, I apologize for her name. Anyway, she did a great book on English that I thought my high school teacher would be very proud of me for even attempting to review it.
Not Eat, Shoots, and Leaves, is it?
Yes, it was.
Well, it's funny. I've heard people actually comment that she may know some grammar, but she doesn't know as much grammar as she thinks she knows.
Yeah, but it's a, but it is a great popular.
It's very popular. Attempt. Absolutely,
and people will read it, and for that reason, it should be read. It should be listened.
True,
to.
True, yeah. True.
But particularly was kind of put off because her PR person let me know she was too busy to talk to me, and I said, okay, well, when she does her sequel, I just won't review it. And then those 2.5 to 2.25 million people and whatever percentage turnover our way, we'll let them determine what.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So you obviously have been collecting books on Burns for some time, and I believe you've amassed a considerable collection.
Not really. I haven't been collecting them a long time. When I started on my Scottish pilgrimage, I wanted to learn everything I could about Scotland. My wife and I have been to Scotland. Coming up this summer would be our 16th trip. I've bought land in Scotland. I've sold land in Scotland. I still have land in Scotland. I'm proud to say that I don't consider myself a Sassenach. When I go and visit over there, I have friends who are there. They welcome us into their homes. We correspond. I look to them for advice on what is going on in Scotland and help when I need it regarding some papers I may be writing. We love Scotland, and my folks, even though they come from the Isle of Jura, I found that the biggest part of Clanshaw comes from right below Inverness, and so we spend a little bit of time there. And this summer, I will take my 2 grandchildren, 8 and 6 years old, that I've been promising them to take them to Scotland, and you may be interested that my little granddaughter, Sterling, who is 6, said to someone the other day, and it was picked up in the Sunday Times, that my papa promised to take me to see where Robert Burns was born, and papa always does what he says. So I found I had to dig deep and get out 2 more tickets to take her this and her brother Ian this summer.
And her name is Sterling.
Sterling.
So it's a good Inverness name.
Named after the city.
Named after the city.
Yeah. Not, I didn't have anything to do with that. Now, that was her mama and her daddy, and they had both visited there when they were single, and that's how Sterling came about.
So along the way, you started collecting books.
Yes, I started buying books, reading Scottish history, and spent a lot of time with Bonnie Prince Charlie. I probably have 100 books on Bonnie Prince Charlie, and just for 10 years, I didn't read anything else but Scottish books. And then I realized that that was not good either, so I started reading other books, and now I find myself dividing it about equally. I have probably over 4,000 Scottish books. I have, a good guess would be over 1,000 books on Burns alone. Kind of hard to believe, but here's a man who wrote only one book, and even though there were other editions that came out later, there were just a few poems added to it, but... Mm-hmm. His classic Kilmarnock edition that came out in 1786. I was able to find one of those about 1 a.m. one morning while just trolling the internet.
And my goodness.
Went up and woke up my wife and said, I found it. I found it. And she said, are you crazy? It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I said, look. And she said, my goodness, you found it. And I said, yeah, now we got to buy it. And so we did. And
excellent.
So we have that. And I have pretty well... near all of the early collections up through 1850 on his. So I have a lot of Burnsiana.
Mm-hmm.
Burnsiana, odd scraps of things and little pieces about Burns. And that's where some of the 157 million comes from. It'd be ashtrays and trinkets and all this stuff. So anything that looks durable, I'll buy it. And so you walk into my library, there is a Burns room. Nothing but Burns in there, and I plan to take Jim Flannery with me over there in a couple of weeks to see it, and you're invited also.
Well, thank you.
You'd like to see it.
Well, tell us about how the Burns suppers got started.
And go back with me to the summer of 1801. 9 of his friends who knew him decided to get together and talk about Burns and reminisce about Burns. When we wonder today how all this got started and see all the beautiful rooms that... dinners are held in. I just am back from Charlotte speaking at the Charlotte Country Club, and it's so beautifully adorned, and the men are so dressed up, almost peacock strutting types with their kilts and their trews, and the women are dressed to the nines. And you think about that little group of 9 men who got there, and they feasted that evening on sheep's head and haggis. They dined in the Eyre home where the poet was born. At that particular time, and this was 5 years after he died, by the way, at that particular time, it was serving as a rural tavern, and they read to a haggis, which Burns had written. They toasted Burns, The account that is in the Burns Chronicle says 3 times 3 for every toast. So I don't know how they walked out of there, but I'm assuming they did. They had a painting of Burns that was on the board that on the other side was a former sign for the Poet's House that displayed that it was a tavern. And they resolved to meet again each year. And basically they ate haggis, they recited his poems, sang his songs, and raised a glass to the memory of their departed friend. And all I can say to that is it sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Hmm. So if somebody were to say, tell me 3 key things about Burns that I should be aware of.
Can I add one other word?
Sure.
Along that
absolutely.
Line? The main man responsible for that was a gentleman named Reverend Hamilton Paul. There's no record of what he said. There's no record was kept. He had no idea what he was unleashing in that little house that day. First Burns Supper that was held 208 years ago, and I must confess that he is a hero of mine. From these 9 men in 1801, the clubs are meeting all over the world on January 25th, or either the Friday before or the Saturday before, mm-hmm. and hundreds of thousands will raise their glass in Burns. And they have been criticized, too, because one wag said that more drunken men praise Burns than any other man in the world. But this was the beginning back then to be such a big event now.
3 things that the average person should know about Robert Burns.
Well, you
know, what would spring to mind?
One, you have to realize that the little house he was born in today will become a multimillion-dollar center next to it within the next couple of years. The thing about it is it started when Burns was born there, and it has grown to this 250th anniversary celebration that will literally bring in the millions of dollars that we have already alluded to. The mm-hmm. other is this little kid grew up and wrote a book. And as I stated earlier, he wrote only one book, poems chiefly in the Scottish dialect. And he was in all kinds of trouble and was thinking about going to the islands to get away from the trouble. But his countrymen bought out the 612 copies that were printed. And then someone talked him into going to Edinburgh for another edition, and this became the Edinburgh two-state edition, in which 2 different times they ran off the copies of the Kilmarnock edition that became known as the Skinking and the Stinking Edinburgh edition, only because it's supposed to be skinking, which means watery, talking about the haggis, and when they did the second one, they didn't put the print back in, and it came out stinking. So today, rare books owners will distinguish between which one is which by the stinking or the skinking. The other thing that I would say that Burns has just been celebrated so much, I do not get into the idolatry factor and the bardology that people talk to. I know what he means to me. It's an opportunity to get together with your friends. It's an opportunity to celebrate. It's an opportunity to have good food and to have a drink where you might have 200 or 300 at a fancy get-together. I talked to a gentleman the other night who had 30 guests in his home, and he celebrated his own Burns night there. So when you take all 3 and put them together, you just cannot forget his wife, Jean Armour. She loved him. She took care of him. She was aware of the times that he was having with other women. She actually took a child in her own home that he had fathered, and to me, this would be a ticket out the door. If some of my friends or myself tried that, we would be gone in a New York second, and her concept was this. Poor Robbie. He should have had 2 wives.
Let's take a break and listen to his most famous song, and we'll be right back. This is Auld Lang Syne. You're listening to The Celtic Show on WRFG Atlanta. John Falstaff with you. The time is 6:01. We have 1 more hour of great Celtic music.
Should all the acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should all the acquaintance be forgot and Auld Lang Syne? For Auld Lang Syne, but
kindness yet for all lang syne. We twa hae